Running go?
Now it's running. It's working now.
You want us to talk
yes.
now?
Yes.
Oh. Right from the beginning, or is it? Don't you want to play this back and see whether it's work right?
All right. We'll
now,
stop
now
it.
Now turn it back. Well, we are in Wasilla, in the home of Heine and Mrs. Snyder, and the one that's talking to you is Heine Snyder, a well-known old-timer of the damn territory, now the state of Alaska. It is not necessary for me to introduce myself because a great many that will listen to this know who I am and what I have been. But the main point is that I want to talk to his daughter, right?
Right.
who is here present to take a record of what I'm going to say. Well, I do not know exactly the year, but I think it was somewhere in 1911 or 12 when the first time I met Tony Diamond, when he was judge or prosecuting attorney. No, he was the judge, yeah.
Well, I think he was a commissioner.
Commissioner, well.
In Shoshana. He wasn't a...
No, but he acted as a judge in a case before the court.
Yes.
See? And the case was a bootleg case. I remember the man, too, who was accused of doing it. His name was Chauncey Peterson, and he had a... Later on in 1916, I remember he had a place on Fourth Avenue, and he got pretty well caught on several cases, the same as he did in the Shoshana. It wasn't really a bootleg case because there wasn't any law at that time against whiskey so much as it was. He was selling it without a license, and that was a pretty hard point to get.
Was this in Shoshana?
That was in the Shoshana, yeah. And I seen the case, and it was a pretty nice case, and after it was all over. By the way, I like to say it was held in a roadhouse. And the roadhouse was run by a man they named it Honest Miller. And everyone that used to come for the first time from the outside into his place got a free drink. Well, in Honest Miller's place was the case held, and I was down there, and I thought it was very fair. So after it was all over, I had a talk with the judge, with Tony Diamond, and we became very good friends. And later on, I got to working for Henshaw was his name, who had taken the lease from Manly, Price, and Ives, who had the lease on that property. It was discovered by Wasbord Johnson, they used to know him, and I'll come to his name later on. I can't just think of his name. They had found that, but the real discoverer of that property was an Indian by the name of Indian Jim. That's all we know about him. And he was supposed to get a lot of money for showing, Jim is his name, I'll get his name, where that property was located. And all I know, he got a gramophone, one of those old master's voice gramophones. You would hear it squeak all over the hills. And I don't know, a little money. But anyway, I met Tony there, and we got pretty good friends. It is rather a funny incident that I always like to tell when I get to make a speech because of the fact that we were of opposing characters as far as politics goes. For Tony was a very staunch Democrat at that time already, and my inclination was more towards the Republican Party, although I wasn't an American citizen that time. We argued about the point about that the goods come in from England without a tariff, which I thought wasn't right because the goods that were made in England were sold cheaper in America than they were in England. So I was on the Republican side of putting up a great big tariff, while Tony was more in favor of letting them come in and give more wages to the working men. However, we never came to blows about it. But anyway, Tony, of course, as I said, was a good staunch Catholic, and I was brought up in a Calvinistic home. And we never talked about religion. That never did came up. And Tony, of course, as you know, he came from Ireland, or his folks came from Irish descent, and I was from Dutch descent. And I'm going to tell you this funny story, because I'm going to probably tell it anyway on the night when we're going to have a party for Bob Bartlett. Well, here is the story. After many years, when Tony became delegate to Congress, I became the senator of the 3rd Division. But I was still working at that time for the Alaska Road Commission. And on a nice summer afternoon, while the gang I was forming there was rip-rapping on the Matanuska River, I heard an automobile, toot-toot, and somebody waving. So I got up from the rock I was sitting on, and I had my long-handled underwear, which I still wear, that kind of underwear, not the same one, of course. And there was kind of sunning myself. And just previous to that, I had helped one of the boys on his engine, which was a little bit out of whack, and it got a little bit dirty. But when this noise came from this automobile, I moved over there, and who do you think it was? It was Tony Diamond. And he was with a party, and presumably, I think, they came from Washington. Very fine party. And he seen me working there, so he called me over, and he says, "How's everything going, Heine?" "Oh," I says, "pretty good, Tony." And we talked about different things in Anchorage. Then he finally turned around, and he says to these ladies there, very nice dressed, he says, "This is Heine Snyder. He was in the Shoshone when I was there, and we had a week or two, we went prospecting together." And he says, "Heine Snyder is the senator from the 3rd Division." Well, they gave me kind of funny look, and one of those girls or woman says in a very soft voice, which I could hear, "Well, it doesn't take much to be a senator in Alaska, does it?" I usually have to tell this story because it is a real one and a good one, and it belongs to two old pioneers. But Tony was always well-liked in there because he was a square shooter, and I remember he used to limp, and later on we could always see he limped, and that was caused by he climbed on his horse one time, and he had a gun in his belt, and it went off, and he shot himself. However, he made it home. The next time we came, when I came to Alaska, we met a couple of times, and we talked on the street many times. Towards the end, I remember that Tony was also getting old, and we inquired about each other, and I remember him saying one time, I asked him about his children, and he told me about one of his daughters, that she had become a nun. And he says to me, "Heine, she is exceedingly happy." And I said, "Well, Tony, if that's the case," I says, "I'm glad to hear that, because if a man or a woman does these things, why, and they are happy with what they're doing, that's the main thing in life. However," I says, "you're getting pretty gull darn old, you old guy." I says, "How about, I got a wonderful place down there on Lake Lucille, and that land is going to be worth some money. I'll tell you what I'll do with it. I'll give you a lot, 100 feet on the lake, close to where I live, and it'll be probably 3 acres in it to the railroad track. And not only that, it'll give you that, but I'll go with my friends and we build you a nice cabin. And then you can just sit down there and write your memoirs of the things you have done, for you've been a pretty good guy." "Well," I says, "Heine, I don't know." He says, "I'm the judge around here, and I don't just like to walk off like that." I said, "But I think it over." Then I got the position or the chance to go to Chicago at the Republican convention. And just before I left, I got a telephone call. He says, "Heine?" "Yeah, this is Tony, yeah. How about you coming over a minute before you leave?" So we talked about a little while. He says, "I understand you're supposed to vote for Taft." Well, he says, "You know what his father did. He says he didn't give us any government at all." Well, I says, "They can say what they want, but," I says, "I'm not going to vote for Taft." "Good." He says, "That's why I wanted to see you." So the influence of Tony was that he voted for Eisenhower, and Eisenhower was elected. And from that time on, I have seen him quite often. And then I made a mistake one time. I was then called back to work for building a railroad on Fort Richardson. I don't know who recommended me, but I got the position as superintendent, and I built the railroad there during the wartime. And I made several speeches and got well liked by many people. And there was a fellow by the name of Gronwald and others that was in the place where they sent the boys out with their trucks. And among them was a fellow down there, and I was told he was going to be arrested because he had a woman in Fairbanks, and the woman has a child. She came from Palmer, and he had to pay her so much money, and he refused to pay her. But they wanted anybody to go good for him. So I, as a darn fool, I went good for the fella. But I found out later on that I got a letter from a judge in Fairbanks that I was to pay so much money a month because the former husband hasn't paid it and they can't locate him. Mm-hmm. So I went to Tony one time. He says, you're just like the rest of the old timers. That's the things you all do. But he says, I'll try what I can do. So he went and wrote to Fairbanks, and I don't know what else he did, but he wrote to Fairbanks, and he called me up one time, and he says, well, you're in for it, partner. He says, there isn't anything I can do about it. He says, you'll probably have to pay for it. Well, I says, now I don't know. I says, that's a tough proposition. I says, I got a mother in the old country that I'm keeping too, and I says, it's surely a bad one. Well, he says, maybe. And so the only last impression I got from Tony, as Tony, and that was over, there was a bookstore where now a jewelry store is.
In Anchorage.
Or was it? No, it is now where they have that big store right across from the post office.
And
it was
Woolworths.
Woolworths is. Mm-hmm. And they were selling magazines in on that corner there, and Tony was quite a reader, and I was a reader too. And that was the last time I seen him, and we talked for a while. It was a Sunday afternoon. We had been in a show, and I was with Mrs. Snyder. He says, how about that case about in Fairbanks? Well, I says, I haven't heard anything about it anymore. I says, I haven't sent any money. They didn't tell me how much I had to pay. So I says, I just let it go for a while. But I says, I think I still hang on it. So, yeah, he says, that's a bad deal. I shook hands with him, and we parted, and I got home, and just about 15 or 20 minutes later, the telephone ring. Yeah, is this Snyder? I says, yeah, this is Heine. He says, is this the Heine Snyder from the Shoshana? I says, yes, Tony, it is. Well, he says, about that deal, yeah, just forget it. So I know by his influence or what he has done, he still was my old friend Tony Diamond. And I don't know, I have in my mind an idea to write another book. And I've already started on a story about him.
Good.
And I have also stories about men like Shorty Gustafson, who of course are little and small, but they were still pioneers.
And colorful people.
They're colorful people. And he makes his own music, this Shorty did, and so on. And we had just last week we got together and we sent him to the home in Sitka.
Yeah, well, I hope you do write this new book.
Yeah, I will. I write a little story every week in the Weekly Frontiersman, Strange Things. And I have the privilege of printing that and enlarge it or cut it down or leave it in the original.
So that you can just take the same type
use it. Yes, use that. And there is also the other, nobody can use that, see?
Good.
Nobody can use it. And I'm going to do that in my book. I don't know what the name will be, but will it be a little better than the one I had, the paper cover, because I'm going to make these stories well longer. And I have been going around and find out many things about them, about the Willow Creek mines, and
yes, well, we should get this history down, you know, while people remember it. I wanted to ask you, get back to this property. Did he ever talk to you again about your offering him the property
on
the lake?
No, he never mentioned it.
Well, he never liked to accept.
Yeah, but you see, I know that too. He didn't want it as a gift, but they couldn't let him work for it neither. And I told him, I says, I'm not the only one, but the rest of them all come in there and buy you the best and the nicest cabin that you've ever seen. And he says, I got, my homestead is a mile long and a half a mile wide. And I says, I got timber on there till hell won't have it.
Was wonderful. You know, I never knew this before. No, he never mentioned it.
No, he wouldn't say that. But I know I did because I have now given the Pioneers of Alaska, you know.
Yes, I know you
5
have.
Acres.
Yes.
And I can sell it. The lots down here, there's lots alongside of my place. I sold it to a man in Juneau. His name is Kraus for $3,000, and that was only 65 feet on the lake.
Is that right?
That's what it is worth now.
Do you have any more lots left?
No, I only have one more, and it is so close to the house.
Yes.
See, otherwise I get neighbors.
Yes.
And you don't want it. And
not that close.
No. I have a grandson. His name is Jimmy Rogers, and he went to school, and then he went to the university, and I says, if you get your master's degree, if you make it, I'll give you a lot. And just this summer he made it. And
good.
And I gave him a lot next to this one. And all the daughters, 3 daughters we have, they all have, each have 2 lots.
Good.
So most of the ground down here is already
it's
given
all
away.
Taken. Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we hope that the pioneers will get together now and start working on it.
I hope so too.
We now in the on the 20th of May we'll be married 50 years, and.
That's
we're going to have a big party, and I know the pioneers will be all there, but it is on a Thursday, so they suggested that we have it in Palmer in a big hall because we haven't got enough facilities here to take care of all these people. And it'll be advertised in the paper, and we have one thing we're going to put in there, that we don't want any flowers because that's just too much money thrown away. And we don't want any presents. In the first place, we haven't got no walls to hang any more pictures.
You certainly have lots of wonderful things here.
And no more too much dust collectors here. But we'll go in and ask them or give them the opportunity to donate a little money towards the building of a basement so that it rains, the pioneers can crawl in there. And we have to have water,
yes.
And we have to have toilet facilities.
In other words, the money donated will help build this pioneer cabin here on your Lake Lucille.
Well, it will not be a cabin.
I mean, it'll be more like a resort.
Yeah.
Where old-timers can come.
Yes,
and
yes, and on the one side, for an example, there'll be places there where they can camp. See, if you want to make camps.
I'm a pioneer, you know. Yeah. May I come and camp?
Good. Well, that makes it for the pioneers and their families. I was thinking, too, there's a wonderful spot there, a low place, to make a swimming pool there. Because the water in the lake is pretty cold, but
yes.
it isn't safe enough for my feeling. You know,
yes.
The little touch goes in there, and if there was a concrete wall around it, and it is from 3 inches to a foot and a half or 2 foot to play in, and then make it so that they can use it not just once a year, but anytime they want to go.
Yes.
See?
Uh-huh.
Because in another year or two, or less maybe, you're going 3/4 of an hour from Anchorage over to Wasilla.
Yes, it'll be much faster than it
see?
Is now.
Then you go any time. It's a nice day like this. Or
just come up and have a picnic.
Picnic.
Yes.
That'll come nice.
Can you recall any other particular incidents regarding Tony Diamond besides the Shoshana and the times you've seen him around?
Yes, I have just one, two. You know, I lived here then on Lake Lucille, and I been uptown.
In Anchorage?
No, Wasilla. See,
Wasilla.
There was only 3, 4, 5 houses there,
yeah.
And I had a mink farm that time.
How long ago was that? What year?
Well,
was that?
That was
about what time?
I wouldn't know exactly what time it was, but it was later. No, it was before I was a senator. I was just
back in the 40s.
1924, 26. Because he wasn't even done. But I remember what he came down for. I met him on the railroad track. There was no road here.
Oh yes.
See, you had to walk on the railroad track to get here.
Mm-hmm.
And I met him on the railroad track. And Well, I says, what are you going to do here? Well, he says, I wanted to see you on something. He says, I know you're a Republican already, I know, but there's one man I like to see be elected. And it was a man from he was for the House of Representatives.
For the legislature. For the territorial legislature.
Yeah. And he says, I don't care about the rest, but he says, I meet this fellow, and I met him, I don't just can't remember his name neither. But he says, as a friend and as an old pioneer, I says, I would see that he gets in. And I says, well, I'll think it over, you know. Mm-hmm. Because you don't give yourself away neither. But he made that trip, and the mosquitoes, they were terrific.
Had he taken a train up from
Anchorage? I don't know how he came. I never. That must have been because there was no
road. No road between Anchorage and Matanuska Valley there.
He walked all the way from the railroad, and then had to wait till the next train came back. That was a day later or so, you know.
I see. He came up to see you to ask you about.
But I missed him. I was usually had hunting or something to do, and I wasn't home. Mm-hmm. But he met Mrs. Snyder, because he talked to her, mm-hmm. and she told me he had been here.
I see.
But on the street we always met, and we always had to stand and talk in the corner of the mm-hmm. streets. And it was a terrific loss. He was a good man. He was a conscientious man, and he is something like Bob Bartlett I can talk about. He never forgot that he was not just right away a big man, a judge, you know. He was always still the old pioneer. You could come over in your own overalls, or he was always willing to listen to you. It was an awful loss, but then we all have to go someday.
Can you tell us something about what you were doing in the Shoshana back in 1912 and 1913?
Well, when I attended the court that time, I wasn't working at all. I was working for myself. I used to go and cut wood. And by the way, the wood was very small because it was high up in the mountains. And we used to get $45 for a cord of wood, but it was all cut by hand.
You cut it and sold it to the prospectors to the mine.
To Henshaw, who had the gold mine, see? Oh, uh-huh. That was that during the winter time. And then before I went to work as a flunky, they call that, you know, as a steward or a waiter, and it was only one that for that whole crew.
Was there a fairly big gold mine in Shoshana those days?
Well, it was a good one, yeah. There was only about 42 men was working there.
And did they ever take out a great deal of gold, or
was it
too expensive to get
it
out?
Well, the first pay, one time there was a good pay, but later on I understand that they walked off without paying him. And the miners themselves went and mined out enough gold to pay their own salaries.
And that was
after I left. That was the end of that the strike in the Shoshana. And there was another man who was a character down there. And he was an Irishman, and he used to fight. And he used to fight with a knife. And his nickname was Jack the Ripper. Yeah,
I suppose he'd get a little fire water first.
Yeah,
and
he'd get drunk. And I saved his life one time. He had a bottle, and I worked for him. He was a cook down there for Henshaw, see? And he hit that bottle. He was afraid I would find it. And they had these flower bands, they open up these flower bands, you know.
Bins, yes.
Yeah, flower bin in the kitchen. And he must have had that bottle in the flour. And I was, putting up the table. It was only tin plates shown on a knife and a fork and a spoon. That was all. And just caribou meat or moose meat, you know, or sheep meat and potatoes. And while I was doing that, I heard him in the kitchen and I didn't hear him no more. And when I looked towards the kitchen, I could only see his legs. He had probably drank a little bit too much, and he leaned over too far, and he fell in this flour.
His head down, couldn't breathe.
And he couldn't get out there.
Oh.
And I grabbed him by the neck, by the scuff of his neck, and I pulled him out. And when he came out, he said, "You're fired." Yeah, I was fired because I found out where he got his bottle hit.
But he couldn't have breathed if he.
No, he would have choked to death in it. Mazowa. But there were a lot of tough cats. There was the Russian kid was over there too. And the Russian kid held up with others, held up a train in Canada, and he got 15 years in the penitentiary.
Oh,
and there was Stampede Mary. I worked for Stampede Mary.
What did she do?
Well, she had a little bit of a place. She had a small bit of a restaurant. Mm-hmm. I had told a story about, it's in my little book, So Was Alaska. I met her over here, over at Copper Center one time. And there was lots of characters there. There was another man by the name of Jimmy Kingston. Was a fellow there by the name of Louis Schönborn. And that's a German name, which means he was born pretty.
Yeah.
And see, Schön is pretty, and born means he was born that way. But he was a very homely man. And he had made quite a stake in the Dawson country, and he went outside and he got a hold of some girl, and he told me he was lucky they didn't send him to the penitentiary, but they got all his money. But he used to have a store, and they had no cash register, but he used to have all his money in a roll. If you buy anything, everything was a dollar for a cup of flour, a dollar for a cup of sugar, a dollar for a pound of bacon, everything was a dollar. So he used to roll it out. Well, on one place, he crossed the road one time and they found him shot. And a fellow by the name of Jimmy Kingston was accused of it. Frank Hoffman was there. He knew all about it. And he got off. He got free. But he went up north and then he lost his life crossing a river. But I wish Tony was here and we could bring up these old stories again.
Yes, I wish I had gotten those stories down while he was still living, but I didn't.
Frank Hoffman was a wonderful fellow, too. They were like twins, you know, them two.
He was marshal in Shoshana when my dad was commissioner.
He was Frank was marshal, too, when he was over here in Matanuska. And he had always a great sense of humor. I remember we were sitting in the Hotel Anchorage, and there were quite a number of people had come from Texas. They thought this be a good country to raise cattle, you know. They can get it cheap. In fact, they could get it for nothing, because they never know that we had mosquitoes, too. But Vasilla, but in that time, was the headquarters of all the bootleggers, practically. We had Moose Hank over here, and Charlie Harris, and several others. They were making booze and then brought it to Anchorage. But we had consumers here, too. And Frank was pretty wise to it. He caught a few of them. He didn't like to go out and arrest them, but if somebody squealed, he had to do it. And I remember we were sitting in the Hotel Anchors, and they were talking down about the places to make big cattle ranches. And Frank says, he says, Vasily is a good country. Here's Heine Schneider down there. He'll tell you all about it. Hey, Heine, how about the country around your place? I says, pretty good. Yes, he says, it goes 8 gallon to the acres down there. Yeah, Frank was a wonderful fella.
Well, I guess he and Tony Diamond were very close friends.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Wonderful. Because when he then ran for delegate to Congress, you know, Frank was quite the booster for him in the Matanuska Valley, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we almost forgot to talk about the prospecting trip that Tony and I did. I have been cruising the country there up on the headwaters of Solo Creek and used to kill some sheep to eat and so on. And I found a little prospect on a place called Granite Creek.
Now, was this?
This is in the Shoshana.
In the Shoshana, that around 1913?
11 or 12 there in that part. Because it was just before the World War started. That's the only thing I remember. Mm-hmm. Because I remember when a man came up and told us that General von Kluck was over almost in Paris, and we didn't know there was even a war on, and that was already 60 days going on.
The war started, I think, in 1914, so this must have been 1913.
1913, yeah. I was married in 1915, but I went outside then. But anyway, so I had you have a little small bottle, and I had, while I panned, I get collars, and I never threw it away, and I put these collars in there. So while we were talking about prospecting, and I told Tony, I says, well, I don't know, I got a little prospect, but I don't know if it's much good. He says, where is it? And I told him, I says, there it is. Well, he says, how about going over with you?
Solo Creek?
Yeah, somewhere Solo Creek. or Cow Creek, I forgot what it was, but anyway, where there was lots of sheep there. Well, he says, I'll go with you. Well, I says, come on. So he took his blanket, and he got a horse.
That was before he hurt his leg, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, anyway, he got a horse, and he packed it with blankets, and I packed my stuff on the back, and it wasn't very far. It was about, maybe a day or a little more than a day, and the days was pretty long done. He stuck some fish hooks in his head because we can fish, you know. And he had I had a 22, and he had a 35 or a 40, 30-40. And then we shoot a bird, and we take the liver or something out of the bird or a piece of flannel, and we catch fish. Well, we didn't do a great deal of prospecting. We dug a few holes here and there, and it wasn't, but we sit and talk politics most of the time. And I got pretty close to Tony at that time, and he close to me, and he says, well, there's one thing sure, Snyder. He says, you come from a very good family. You got a good religious training, and I too, he says, and what becomes of us is mainly though what our parents has given us. And
how
I think
true.
And that is true, and it comes out every day to you. Well, I would like to talk much more about him, but I think that's about all I can remember. Yeah, this is one to remember too. When I was a member of the Alaska Legislature, Governor Greening, a Democrat, was then the governor, and he had to finish his term. And among the Republicans were there many that wanted that position as governor of Alaska. When I stood before thousands of people, I said to General Eisenhower, if you are going to be the president of the United States, are you going to give us an Alaskan for governor, or are you going to give us some man from the States who does not know the people of Alaska, does not know Alaska, or are you going to give us an Alaskan when you're going to be elected and you got a good chance? He says, we'll give you an Alaskan for governor, and he shook hands with me on it. Well, now, Senator Greening was still the governor of Alaska, and I'm a member of the Elks Lodge, and I go to the bar, and we have a drink there, and there are many people down there, and there they begin to talk about who to put for governor of Alaska. And I says, well, and there were lots of Republicans too. I says, there is only one guy I vote for governor of Alaska, and that's Tony Diamond. And a man walked up to me and says, that's my name, and he was married to one of the daughters of Tony Diamond.
Oh, that was my husband, Tom Riley.
But that was Tom.
That was down in Juneau, wasn't it?
I wonder if he remembers it yet. Can you call him over?
Yes, he's outside.
No, I seen him just walking by here.
I see. Well, yes,
but you
ask him about it.
By gosh, because he says, yes, he says to me, I'm Riley, or I forgot his name, but I think he says, my name is Riley, and he says, that's pretty good for a Republican to recommend a Democrat. Well, I says, I know this man for many, many years. It isn't the party you belong to, I says, it is what you got within, because you're a square shooter. That was the main thing.
Well, where did you have this talk with Eisenhower? Was it in Alaska
or
outside?
No, that was in Chicago.
At the convention.
At the convention, yes.
That convention must have been 1940... Let's see now. Truman was president until...
Dates is so far hard for me to...
I can't remember either. I can look it up to see when he ran for president the first time. I guess it was 48.
Well, I don't know the date, but I remember that. That was a funny incident. I didn't know anything that of his relation would be there, you know.
Yes, I remember Tom telling me something about that. You said some... complimentary thing about Tony Diamond, and he came up and said, well, he was married to Tony Diamond's daughter.
and Gil, you know, Oscar Gil, he was a good Republican, a good friend of mine. He kind of gave you a funny look, but he liked Tony too, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm too outspoken most of the time anyway, but I just blurted right out. So